At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello and welcome to Odds Law, the podcast that uses the odds to bring you the stories behind the sport. Now, I won't take up too much of your time here, as we have a very, very special guest on today's episode in the form of England's second all-time wicket taker, Stuart Broad. We caught up with Stuart ahead of what's set to be a scorcher of an Ashes series in Australia and asked him if England can finally end the drought down under. We also talked World Cups and put Stuart under the microscope to ask, if you had to land an acca to get off a desert island, what would it be? That's all to come on today's show. Stay with us. Hello and welcome to Odds Law with FitStairs, the show that uses the odds to bring you the stories behind the sport. I'm Lola Katz-Roberts, your host for today's show, which is a very special episode for many reasons. Not only are we launching ourselves into the skies as we head down under to prepare for an Ashes series that is hurtling over the horizon. Careful, pilot. We are also launching a brand new podcast. But most of all, it's a very special day because we are in the presence of a cricketing legend, a man whose reputation precedes him, who's broken records and brought delight and entertainment to so many. Ian McIntosh, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Lila.
What's your high score?
Well, this is the record that I broke. I made my debut for my school and got one.
Okay.
And everyone said, don't worry, it'll go better next time. Then I got a duck. Then I got a golden duck. And everyone said, it can't be any worse. And that's when I was introduced to the concept of the diamond duck. Out at the non-striker's end, run out. So no one in the history of Boswell's comprehensive school has ever beaten that record.
I didn't even know that was a thing until you told me.
It really is. It really is.
And of course, we've got another elite sportsman in our ranks today, England's second all-time wicket taker, Stuart Broad. Welcome to the flight to Australia. Are you a good flyer? And do you have any films lined up for the journey?
I'm a wonderful flyer. I think it's one of my favourite things to do, actually. Turn the phone off, get in the skies, watch films, have a glass of red. My favourite film? Good question. I like your sort of Guy Ritchie styles. You know, your rock and rollers and your lock stocks and that sort of thing. So I'd do try and bang through a few of them.
Not Andrew's tenure.
Not Andrew's tenure. That would get us through takeoff.
And last but certainly not least, welcome along to another sporting protege, Henry Beasley. There was a lot of beeping when you were going through security. It looked like you were in a bit of a pickle. All that sorted now?
All good, yeah. I have managed to smuggle through some prize boosts for the,
what we liked
for the audience, so yeah, see what we can do.
Now, speaking of packing, we have a packed show to bring you today, starting with a look ahead to what promises to be a hell of an Ashes series. Then we're going to look ahead to next summer's World Cup and take a deep dive into the major markets that underpin our world of sport. Okay, seatbelt signs are on. Time for takeoff. Okay, Stuart, we are on the plane to Australia, so it's time to really get you in the Ashes mood. And we're going to start with the over. It's six quickfire questions, six one-word answers. Any suitable one-word answer will do, but if you pause for longer than 3 seconds, you are out.
Okay.
I'm going to hand over to the Odds Law opening bowler, Ian McIntosh.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Excellent. Will England win the Ashes?
Maybe.
Is Vegemite a crime against toast?
Yes.
Would Stuart Broad be England's top wicket taker if he was playing in this series?
No.
Would you, Stuart Broad, win a fight with a kangaroo?
No.
Will the Aussie fans be more hostile than the US fans at the Ryder Cup?
Yes.
What's your least favourite thing about Australia?
No.
I think there's a review in there somewhere. Very well done. Very well handled. Thank Good you. Knock. I think you've seen off the new ball well.
Thank you. And no breaks, no pauses, was no, there? No, sort of flowed through, got into a rhythm.
But now I'm going to bring in Henry Beasley is my latest weapon. And he's going to fire away with the odds for the Ashes.
Yeah, so outright odds, Stuart, Australia 8-11 to win the series. Probably a slightly bigger price than some of us were expecting this time last year. England 7-4 for their first away series win since that famous 2010-11 series. And if you fancy the draw, that's 15-2. So I think the last two home series have both ended in 2-2 draws. It's 15-2. I mean, we can obviously talk about Australia a little later on, but what do you make of the visitors' chances? They're 7-4. It's the shortest price they've been since that 2010-11 series. What do you make of that? Do you think it's a fair reflection of their chances?
Yeah, it's the best chance they've had since that 10-11 trip.
Yeah.
I think it will be all on the first two test matches, if I'm honest. Mm. If England don't get anything out of the first two,
yeah,
then that's a major problem, because in Australia, the energy, the flow of the whole country then will build up with Australia, and then you're fighting a bit of a losing battle. So I think England have to win at Perth.
Yeah.
The first test match. I think the Aussies will get a result at the Gabba because it's pink ball. I think it'll swing around. Mitchell Stark's amazing with that pink ball. So I think it could be 1-1 going into Adelaide, the third test match, and then anything could happen. Mm. I think that would be the best result for the fans.
Yeah. I don't think we won a test match at the Gabba either, have we, since I think it's 1986. So yeah. I think, like you say, getting a result out of that first test match is going to be absolutely critical to England's chances, isn't it, Lola?
It certainly will. obviously, you know, it's normal for there to be a bit of a war of words in the press in the build-up to an Ashes series. I wonder if, did the reaction to your comments surprise you at all? I'm not going to say they're running scared, even though I've just said it. But do you think there would be a level of embarrassment if England went there and won?
I don't know if embarrassment's quite the right word. I think Australia are expected to win in Australia. Always are. They're a powerhouse there. They're phenomenal at playing in Australia. And the public expect them to win. I think there's an interesting narrative around this England team because they've got players that Australia are quite rightly wary of, in the likes of Joe Root, Harry Brook, even Ben Duckett and Crawley, top of the order. You're not sure what you'll get. Joffre Archer, Mark Wood are all players that the Aussies will go, cool, you know, they could cause us some trouble if England get it right. Ultimately, England have to get it absolutely spot on and Australia have to have a wobble for England to have a chance over there. And my comments where I said it was England's best touring side going to Australia since 2010 and probably Australia's worst side got a bit of traction in Australia. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're necessarily happy with that. But I think when you just frame up that highlight headline of Australia's worst team since 2010, it looks quite sort of shocking.
Yeah.
But actually the facts behind it, we're never talking about who's going to be opening the batting for Australia. You just know what the team's going to be. They've got doubts over the captain, whether he's going to be fit. They're an ageing team, which you can class as a great positive. It's an experienced team. But if they have a few injuries, they might be in a bit of trouble. So I actually thought my reasons behind saying why I thought England have stand a really good chance were quite reasonable. Ultimately, when we go to Australia, it's generally Australian X players coming out going, it'll be 5-0, it'll be this, it'll be that. So why not have a couple of English X players turn the tide?
What's it like on a personal level, and you in particular have ended up all over the headlines when you've been out there before. How does that feel when you wake up in the morning at the hotel, you pick up the papers, you go, oh, bloody hell, should I have done that?
It's a weird feeling, to be honest. It's quite an interesting feeling. But my dad told me before I was a professional cricketer that today's news is tomorrow's fish paper. You have to hold that very tight to you. You know, you can open the paper and go, oh, that doesn't look great. You put it down and 2 days later, you're okay, you know. So Sachin Tendulkar, I think he said to Andrew Strauss at the time years ago, where Strauss asked him, how do you deal with the pressure and papers and media? And he said, well, if I'm playing badly or I've made a mistake, I don't need a journalist to tell me that. I know it. So you know, if you're being criticised, you're generally being criticised for a decent reason, and you know, and you've got to put it right. So you have to have your techniques to deal with that sort of pressure and that sort of criticism and intensity to it. But it's fine. It passes, you know, it does pass.
With this, this is the first series, obviously, first Ashes series that you haven't been part of for a long time. and it's very, I have to say, as a cricket fan, it's very weird to not have you and Jimmy in there opening the bowling. You know, you're Stuart Broad. We know how the Aussies feel about you. You're always going to be in the headlines there. Is that needle something that you still kind of crave a little bit on a deeper level?
Don't crave it. I do, but I do receive it. Do you know what? I haven't particularly missed playing as of yet, but I bowled the last ball of the last Ashes series. And I think when the bowler runs in, whoever that may be, at Perth to deliver that first ball, I think I will miss that. I'll go, wow, like that feeling in my stomach that I used to get. I won't miss all the build-up and the anxiety and the build-up and the training, but that feeling when the first ball's going down is like, it really is a signal for me that my career is definitely over because Ashes cricket started again. If that makes sense. So I bowled the last ball. That's actually, when this series gets underway, Ashes cricket has happened without me being a part of it, which will feel weird. I started in 2009 in Ashes cricket and have played in every series since. So it will feel different, but I also feel very content where I am now. You know, I look at bowlers who get the England shirt and go, I'm really happy for them to help that shirt grow, see themselves grow as players. I'm not there going, wish I was still doing that. So I feel in a very happy place. It's much easier talking about it than doing it.
Does it help that there could not have been a better way to end your Ashes career than the way that you did it? It's like,
I think so. I talked to a few people about when they move away from the game, and actually it was the people that made the decision themselves seemed to fit retirement a bit easier. So Sir Alistair Cook, Owen Morgan, these guys who went, okay, I'm going to call it a day. That's me. And then it's when it's your decision, it's easier to take than when a coach sits you down or a captain sits you down and goes, you're not in our plans. Because you'll always be going, well, I should be. I'm good enough to be. Because you're naturally very competitive. So, yeah, I feel like I've settled in pretty well to retirement because, you know, I made the call to step away maybe a couple of years too early. Actually, I felt like I could have carried on playing, but I wanted to finish against Australia. I wanted to finish.
I was going to say, pretty good way to go out as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a bit of a, not a fear, because I always played like with a positive mindset, but at 37, I think I was when I bowled my last ball, I never wanted like a 21-year-old, I never wanted to play against a 21-year-old and they go, thought this was supposed to be good?
No.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I never wanted to get to that place where it just looked like I was clinging on and hanging on and not being successful in that graph dipping down the long way. I just thought, while I can still do it, while I'm taking wickets, get out of there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome back. If you'd like to place a bet on any event discussed on this show, it's pretty easy. Just visit fitstairs.com. We have a new app as well as telephone and text betting service. If you give us a call, you can get a price on any market as well as special bets. 020 7851 5407 is the number, or text the office on 07492 882 213. You'll have to be over 18 and please bet responsibly. Okay, guys, this is the Odds Law podcast. So it is the law that we must talk about the odds. So we're going to move on and talk about some of the key Ashes markets. Henry, over to you with the odds. Do you need the iPad?
I reckon I can run you through the top batsman odds.
Top man.
No problem. So Steve Smith, currently 7-2. That's 4.5 lower than the decimal price. I know you like your decimals. how many runs have you seen him score over the last sort of 10 to 15 years, particularly in Ashes Series. Joe Root next in, 9-2. I think he's averaging more than 65 in 2025 at the moment.
Less in Australia, though.
Still,
that's a career.
Still chasing that elusive Ashes 100, isn't he? Harry Brook next in, he is 11-2. Travis Head, also 11-2. They're kind of the big four, aren't they, batsmen of this series coming up. And then you've got Usman Khawaja. He's next in, 15-2. I think he was Australia's highest run scorer at the last series. You're shaking your head, Stuart. You don't fancy any 15-2 there?
I don't see a 15-2 there.
Really? Out of those prices, kind of which one jumps off the page? And I suppose you've kind of got to start with Joe Root, given that there is all this talk about will he finally get 100 down under? And I suppose the second part of that question, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on how you think that impacts his legacy. I mean, does he need 100? It's the only thing missing from his CV, right?
It's the only thing missing. I know him extremely well, and he will definitely sacrifice 100 there to win.
Yeah.
I think he'll get 100. You know, it is a bit of a talking point.
Yeah.
He will be feeling that a little bit, because why has he not scored 100 there? That'll be going through his mind a little bit. Ultimately, they've always had Pat Cummins and hey, brilliant bowling attack.
Yeah.
And it's much harder scoring runs in a team that's getting beaten as well. Mm-hmm. Beaten on all his tours. So this will be his best opportunity to do it. He's got the better top order going.
Yeah.
If you're 1, 2 and 3 doing well, it's going to make it much easier to score runs at 4. That's why you mentioned Steve Smith, Travis Head. They're number 4, number 5. Mm. If Australia get off to good starts, then those guys will potentially score more runs.
Yeah.
Harry Brook's the interesting one for me. And yeah. He's the one that I see a bit of value in.
Yes.
Because he'll go and get 180 somewhere.
Yeah.
Mm. When the bowlers are a bit tired and they'll whack them to all parts. Interested Stokes didn't get a mention?
No, don't have a price on him.
We've got a price for him to be top England batsman, but we haven't got a price for him to...
Take care.
Because he's an interest one. Yes, he'll be batting 6.
Yeah.
But his game is really well suited to Australian conditions.
Yeah.
Nathan Lyon, the off-spinner, sometimes causes him some issues. So I'd look at right-handed batters and Harry Brook at that number 5 role.
Okay.
Really intrigues me.
Has a habit as well, doesn't he, of when he gets 100, going on to get those big scores, as you mentioned there.
You had a bit of a reaction when Henry mentioned Khawaja at 15-2. What's your feeling on that price? Do you think that's too short for the kind of year that he's had?
He struggled. He scored runs in Sri Lanka in spin-friendly conditions.
Yeah.
I think technically he's backing off the pace now. So when a quick bowler with the new ball goes into length, he's going back instead of forward.
Yeah.
Gets his feet stuck together, which opens up the stumps as an LBW. So if he gets hit on the pad, he's got nowhere to go. It's going to be out. And it brings in the outside edge. You've got Jofra Archer, one of the best new ball bowlers to left-handed batters, which is a problem for Usman Khawaja. Mark Wood, the extra pace will cause him trouble. So if one of those two plays, it's crucial. Gus Atkinson, also a fine bowler to left-handers. And our spinners are both off-spinners in Will Jackson, Shoaib Bashir, who spin the ball away from the left-hander. So I'm not giving him much hope in that call, but he's very experienced.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. I just seen technical problems of being jumpy at crease, which would make me lean on other players.
Yeah. And like you say, we have got those guys, haven't we? With genuine blistering pace. Do you think Wood and Archer will play test together, or do you think it would just be one of those two?
I think they should. I think they'll play first.
Yeah.
I don't if Woody can get up to speed and fit for Perth, I'd play Archer and Wood together and then play Gus Atkinson as a workhorse to get through a lot of overs.
Yeah.
But if Woody can't make it for Perth, you'd rest Jofra then at the Gabba at the second test and play Woody.
Yeah.
Let's hone in on some England prices. Henry, if you could run us through the top team batsman for England and top team bowler.
Yeah, so as we mentioned, Joe Root just edges out Harry Brook's favouritism when it comes to the England batsman. So Joe Root, 11-5, 3.2 as well, Lola, for your decimals. Harry Brook next in, 13-5, 3.6. Ben Duckett, he's 9-2. He's going to open the batting, isn't he, with Zach Crawley. Stokes next in, 13-2. Crawley there, 7-1. Jamie Smith, he's been really impressive, hasn't he, over the past year or so. He's 15-2. And then Ollie Pope, 8-1. Yeah, sure. What do you kind of make of that?
I think Jamie Smith at number 7 will average healthily, but might not get the weight of runs to really threaten.
Mm.
I like Zach Crawley at that price.
Okay.
I think he averages something like 150 against Pat Cummins.
Really?
His game is suited to Australia. Quick onto the short ball. I like what he has to offer. He has that ability to go and get a 160, 170 in one innings. And at that value, you know, I've said Harry Brook seems to be my man as a leading run scorer. but if I was going for it, I'd go Harry Brook, and then for some value, Zach Crawley.
Sitting in a plane with Stuart Broad, it would be remiss of us not to talk to you about the England bowling attack. Henry, do you want to fire away with the odds quickly?
Yeah, so Archer, as we mentioned, he's 9-4 favourite. Gus Atkinson next in, 5-2. Like you say, he's likely to be the one to get through the most overs out of those three you mentioned. Josh Tung next in, 11-4. Bryden Carse, 4-1. Ben Stokes, 9-2. Shoaib Bashir, 11-2. And Matthew Potts next, 13-2. Where's your money going there, Shoaib?
Gus Atkinson.
Okay.
I think he's the one who could play four out of the five.
Yeah.
Archer might play three.
Yeah.
Stokes is going to try and reduce his bowling
a
little bit. Don't see Shoaib Bashir threatening in the wickets tally. Might be quite good to hold up an end.
Yeah.
Carson Potts won't play enough, I wouldn't have thought. Josh Tung's an interesting one because he might only play three. Mm-hmm. He's amazing at bowling at the lower order.
Yeah.
So picks up sort of rabbit pie wickets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We've all seen the cliff of... Yeah.
So... I see Gus Atkinson as decent value there, and has attributes, tall, gets movement.
Yeah, plenty of bounce on those wickets. And like you say, he's going to be the one, isn't he, to get through the majority of the work. And they obviously will probably manage Archer and Wood if he's there a lot more carefully.
Sadly, guys, that is all we've got time for on the Ashes. Well, not sadly, because we're moving on to a very interesting topic. In fact, I think Henry's so excited, he's starting to look a bit peaky. Henry, have you got a case of World Cup fever?
I mean, European champion Spain, 4-1. Ian, I know you've got a really interesting stat about the last time that Spain lost a competitive match, so we'll come back to you on that. England and France.
You're thinking about it now, aren't you? Like, yeah, oh Jesus.
England and France, joint second favourites, both 13-2. Brazil next in, 7-1. Defending champions Argentina 8-1, Germany 12-1, Portugal 12-1, the Netherlands. Lola, I know, dark horse for you. They're 20-1.
I'll be cheering them home.
It's 33-1 bar. Ian, what do you make of that?
Yeah, Spain are favourites for a reason. They haven't been beaten competitively since the World Cup in Qatar in the group stage by Japan. They have played four this season, won them all, and haven't conceded a goal.
Yeah.
And they're missing so many key players. The strength and depth there is absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
They are far and away the best international team in the world right now. Then after that, I'd say England are in that second bracket.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, let's talk about that. England go into the tournament at 13-2 as the second favourites. And, you know, it's not 2018 anymore. It's not surprising to see them going deep into major tournaments. What's it like from a player's perspective if you were in that camp kind of dealing with that level of expectation?
It's very different in World Cups to just playing regular international fixtures. It's you go into camp for a longer period of time. All the questions are about what you're there to do, always looking a long way ahead. And the art of sports teams a lot of the time is staying very present,
yeah,
and dealing with the now. But all the questions will be, can you make it to the final? Can you win the World Cup? So it's very important that the players control their mindset around that. Even your kits were different, or World Cup kit,
yeah,
you know, everything. You're in camp where you're in the same hotel and you've got your team rooms. It all feels slightly different. So controlling that will be really important. And you need luck in a World Cup, don't you, ultimately? If you say Spain are that incredible or favourites, if you meet them in the quarters, it's just unlucky, yeah, you know? Yeah. You look back at times when, was it the 17, where we beat Colombia, lost to Croatia.
Yeah.
That was like, what an opportunity, because we didn't play any really strong teams, did we?
Croatia were good back then.
We'd have gone in with better odds, surely.
Yeah, we were favourites to beat Croatia, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there any communication between England cricketers and England footballers? Do you speak to anyone that plays for England?
You cross paths a little bit through different sort of sporting events and things, particularly like golfing events and stuff like that. But you don't necessarily socialise with them. You all compete different schedules a lot of the time. You know, cricketers are always all over the world. Mm. But a lot of the football guys enjoy their cricket. You know, Harry Kane's a big cricket fan. He enjoys watching it, which is always nice. Always nice to see that sort of cross. And ultimately, if you're playing sport for your country, you're connected in that way anyway.
Yeah.
You're going through the same things. You have that respect for each other of how you like deal with things. And it's such an exciting year for our football team in the sense that we've got a proper chance. Mm. And it'll be dealing with that expectation because we'll all be sat at home going, we could win this.
Yeah.
And the players have to be able to manage that.
I think to that point, Lola, we're quite lucky. Of our age at the moment, we seem to be going into every tournament where feeling, like you say, like we've actually got a chance of winning this. Our parents' generation are kind of saying, I've seen it all before, you know, don't get yourselves too carried away.
2010, 2014, yeah, it was some of the worst ones. Yeah,
it's quite nice now to think, as you say, that we are going there with a chance. I just thought, I wanted to very briefly ask you about the challenges of playing outside of your comfort zone. So something that I've been thinking about is, out of Europe, England haven't been brilliant at World Cups in recent history anyway. I mean, Qatar obviously knocked out by France in the quarters. 2014, Brazil was an absolute shambles out in the group stage. 2010, went out with a whimper to Germany when we were in South Africa. How difficult is it to kind of make that transition from playing at home and what you're used to playing in a really sort of different environment?
It is very different. It's training, conditioning-wise for that. It's America, isn't it?
So I mean, the heat's going to be a massive thing.
It's going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Whereas the Brazilian players, the Argentine players, that's what they do. It's where they, that gives them ultimately an advantage straight away. But you're not telling me that England aren't preparing for that already. You know, they'll have heat chambers. They'll be out. They've got St. George's Park, which is an incredible facility. I'm sure they'll be able to manipulate temperatures. I mean, Loughborough University, where we trained, our indoor centre, we could manipulate temperatures to get used to different things. I'm sure they'll have the technology to be able to cope with that. But I think ultimately it's about freshness. These footballers now seem to play every week of the year, don't they? So how can Thomas Tuchel and his staff get these players boarding a flight to America like full of energy, full of legs and flying and confident? And I saw a team talk recently with Harry Kane and Tuchel where they were very positive, you know, how they've gone through, they've not conceded a goal, that sort of thing. How do you keep that going into World Cup? Even if you lose one game, doesn't matter. Generally, you're going to lose one game in the World Cup, aren't you? Better off losing it earlier than later. So if you lose one, pick yourself up and go again. You know, it's just hard to control as English people. It's hard to control our mindset as fans, isn't it? You know, it's always going to...
Can't help but get carried away.
We can't help but get carried away.
Ultimately, it's a cup competition. It's not, you know, a 38-game season. There's going to be horrible moments. And like you say, you need a good team, but you do need a little bit of luck as well.
Yeah.
So what's your heart saying, Stuart? Is it coming home?
Yeah, I genuinely Ian's about Spain, it concerns me. He does concern me. But if we avoid them and just meet them in the final, I think we've got a good chance.
I'm really interested in the big outside bet. I saw him at 60-1 on Fitzstairs, Norway. Now, they are in a group with Italy and Israel, and they have absolutely bossed it. They've obviously got Haaland up front, but they're a good, solid team with a great striker. That seems, I mean, that's got to be worth a couple of quid at least.
Yeah, there's a few dark horses in there. We've got to move on. And we're going to move on after all that England chat. You know, I hope all you guys are prepared for crushing disappointment when we go out and in the group stage. Stuart, I don't know if you've worked out by now, but I'm not a big England fan. And I'm not ashamed to say that on a podcast.
Because you're betting on the Netherlands.
England cricket, big fan. England rugby, big fan. England football, not for me. Anyway, enough about me. We're going to talk about some betting stories now. And we're going to start with a little something we like to call it's a long shot, but it might just happen. So I'll show you how to play the game. My long shot is I'm going to go for Florian Wirtz to be the top assist maker in the Premier League this season. Lots of people have been reminding me he's 0010 now in terms of goals and assists, but he's averaging 0.87 expected assists across each 90. And I just think it's going to take the wind changing direction for him to start racking up those assists. So it's 16-1. Florian Wirtz is my choice. Do you have a long shot in mind that you might like to share?
Probably not quite as long as that. I think my long shot, current status, Nottingham Forest are in the relegation zone. I think top half finish.
Ooh,
I like that.
Okay.
I like that. Ian and Henry, want to pitch in?
I had to check whether this was still, would qualify as long shot, but Bayern Munich are 10-1 for the Champions League. That's Bayern Munich who have played 7-1-7 in the Bundesliga, just beat Borussia Dortmund, Harry Kane scoring goals for fun. It's a cup competition. 10-1.
That is pretty good.
Mine kind of follows what Ian said, but and actually follows what Stuart said as well. England are going to win the World Cup. Bayern Munich are going to win the Champions League, and Harry Kane is going to win the Ballon d'Or. He's currently an 8-1 drop for that.
Well, speaking of Akers, we have got one more question that we have to ask you, or scenario that we have to propose, and it's a desert island Akker. So the scenario is you're on a desert island, you're just surviving, you're catching the odd fish, you've got some water, but I don't think you're having a very nice time. And you've got to land a 3-leg Akker to get off the desert island. Can be any events you like, any time period. I realise we are putting you on the spot here. Do you have an idea of what you might go for?
I'd go Rory McIlroy to win the 2026 Masters. I'd go Nottingham Forest to win the 2026 Europa Cup.
Nice.
Punchy.
And I'd go England football to win the Football World Cup. And I feel like if that trifecta came in, or that would be quite... I'd be able to move off the desert island into a mansion.
Yeah, or buy the desert island.
Buy the desert island. Yeah.
That's lovely stuff. I hope that comes in for you, and I hope that you make it off the desert island.
I'll be having a great time. That'd be a brilliant party for me if that comes in. I'll just really enjoy it.
Okay, that is where we're going to leave things today. That was Odds Law. I've been your host, Lola Katz-Roberts. A huge thank you to what's been a star-studded panel in the shape of Ian McIntosh, Henry Beasley, and of course, Stuart Broad, who are all wishing a safe passage to Australia and off your desert island. We'll be back next week with more odds, more debate, and more shenanigans. Until then, kick back, relax, and enjoy the flight. I'll have a glass of champagne, please.
At Ability Chiropractic, we believe every child deserves to grow up healthy, strong, and connected to the incredible power within their own body. From infants to adults, our doctors specialize in purposeful chiropractic care that restores balance between the brain and body, helping you and your family live and heal the way you were designed to, naturally. Families across Columbus are choosing to build lifelong wellness from the start. Discover what true health feels like at Ability Chiropractic. Schedule your visit today at abilitychiro.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Black Friday at BJ's Wholesale Club is so big, we called in the expert at paying less around the holidays.
Scrooge here. Past, present, or future, it's hard to beat the Black Friday deals at BJ's. Believe me, I've tried. Get 25% off select toys, 30% off select small appliances, and 45% off select TVs through December 1st. Plus, doorbuster deals Thanksgiving weekend. These prices are so good they even rattled out Marley's, Jane. Bah, humbug. Sorry, old habit.
Visit BJ's.com/Black Friday for holiday savings.